The Sweet 16 for the Creighton basketball team. Hello, everyone. This is the Half Court Press podcast. Joel Lorenzi and Sam McEwen. We're not going to talk any Nebraska today. This is going to be a full court Creighton conversation. The Jays back in the Sweet 16 trying to make history by getting to the Final Four. The hipsters were apparently right because Creighton is here. Joel, welcome back from Denver. How was the Mile High City?
It was great, and I love a fist pump from Z as he basically calls himself a hipster.
Well, hey, I am I'm thrilled that Creighton is there. It was a lot of fun to watch a team that we believed at the beginning of the season could be really good play in what I would consider its best game of the year against Baylor. And so we're going to recap that game first and talk about just the significance of playing really well on a big stage, and they did. And then the test ahead, which is one of the strange, tough games in a weird way. Creighton's a 10-point favorite against the Ivy League darling. Hard to know exactly what that team's going to be on Friday, and then the potentiality of Creighton making the Final Four. All right, Joel, let's start with this. First of all, great coverage from the weekend.
Appreciate it.
If people haven't read the Ryan Kalkbrenner story that Joel wrote right before the NCAA tournament start, do that first. I would advise that. Kalkbrenner made that story look really good on Friday with an incredible game, and he played really good. They beat NC State. I think we would agree they were a better team than NC State on a
for
lot
sure,
of different levels.
Yeah.
And then on Sunday, they draw a third-seeded Baylor, and they kicked Baylor's ass.
They did.
For 37 minutes, right? Like, it was pretty tight. I think it was 10-7. Then Farabella hits a three to go up 12-10. And they beat Baylor up and down the court. And a deeply satisfying win for Greg McDermott. You could tell based on what happened 9 years ago with Baylor knocking Creighton out in the second round.
And he played it off before the game. Oh, like, he made it seem like he wasn't dwelling on the connection. And maybe he wasn't. I don't know. But he felt it after the game. He talked about it. He said something along the lines of, you know, they lost to Baylor 9 years ago with a special team, and they beat Baylor that night with a special team. So, he was thinking about it. He just had to do the coach stuff and act like he wasn't and keep his sights on what was ahead. But, yeah, it you could tell it meant a ton to him.
Well, he was feeling it.
Yeah.
He was feeling it in that post-game press conference. I thought there was a lot of emotion that leaked out of him. He's not necessarily the most emotional guy you'll ever see. He's just this side of more expressive than Fred Hoiberg, who's maybe the least emotional coach that I've ever covered. But how did they – you've covered this team all season long. You have seen them at their best, and you have absolutely seen them at their worst because you were in Las Vegas when they lost to BYU and Arizona State. How – How did they play so well on Sunday? Like, what factors led into that? And was that the best that they've played all season long?
Yeah, and, you know, McDermott has talked a lot about it being a make-shot, miss-shot game. And basketball is a game of variance. No team has probably been more exemplary of that than Creighton this year because they're shot makers when they're on. They're among the best in the country. This starting lineup, the starting five, is rivaled by very few groups when they're on, and when they're not, it gets ugly sometimes. Earlier in the year, it was detrimental. It meant losses, and this was against. I mean, dating back to Maui, dating back to around that time, like Texas. Texas, I thought, was the first instance where people were like, because really, I should say St. Thomas was the first
That's
instance.
That's the season opener.
Yes. When people were like, what's going on with the shot making? Like, it was a little too close for comfort. That was probably the first warning that this team's floor could be what it's been. And then Texas was like, okay, they can do this against good teams too. Like, this wasn't a one-time thing.
And then Nebraska.
So, yeah. And so their floor.
Nebraska's crown jewel of the year was beating Creighton.
Yeah. And
so they beat a Sweet 16 team.
Very true. And so the floor was there, and it's been spelled out by this team throughout the season. Now, I think they've done a better job of not only consistently putting their ceiling out there or a product closer to their ceiling, but adjusting their floor or finding a better middle ground to where, you know, shooting 3-for-20 from three like they did against NC State, didn't it hasn't meant a loss in a long time, because they found ways to not only make defense their identity, but they found ways to pull out ugly games. They found out ways to win without shooting necessarily well. They've just found different ways to win since, not just since St. Thomas or Texas or Nebraska, but since Vegas, since the 6-game losing streak. They found different ways to win. So now I think Baylor, that game was just a complete summarization of how far this team has come and what it looks like when the shot making is there.
Mm. Earlier this year, you were writing a really good feature story, and Jimmy Watkins was still here. He's now in Cleveland, but you were here, and he was here, and we were sitting in that conference room going over your story on Ryan Nemhard, and I kept saying Montverde, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And you and him kept correcting me, and like, it's not Montverde. It's Montverde.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I bring that up is it felt like all the experiences that Ryan Nemhard has been through in his life,
mm-hmm.
the fact that he played with a brother who was really, really good, who's in the NBA, the fact that he played with all these superstars at Montverde, I feel like we saw a little bit of Montverde on Sunday night. Like, that's what Ryan Nemhard's experiences got him to, was playing the best game of his life in the biggest game of his career.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, I think Sunday was the Creighton version of Nemhard, because at Montverde, he was a really good player, but he was PG1, like to the exact definition of PG1. Often, you know, deferring as a scorer because he's playing with pros, Jalen Duren. That team that I mostly wrote about specifically in that story was Kay Cunningham, Scotty Barnes, Moses Moody, right. Caleb Houston. You can go on and on. So oftentimes he's deferring as a true point guard is what they would call it. And I think now he stepped into this thing where, like, he grows up with a brother who's a pretty good rookie. He plays high school with some of the better young pros in the league.
Yep.
And all of this, you know, culminates into this guy that could probably go off if he wants to. And I think last year when they started to lean on him more as a scorer here out of necessity, was the first glimpse of, like, okay, like, he's been waiting all his life for this type of opportunity to showcase both of those things. And you look at the season leading up to this point, he's controlled the pace in most of his games, I think. And you think
that being a fast pace.
Yeah.
And he pushes.
And you think back to Maui, how he erupted against Arkansas. Yep. Like, the flashes have always been there of a guy that, you know, given the opportunity, given the moment, like, he could show up. And Maui against Arkansas and Sunday against Baylor are probably two of the biggest moments. Not probably. They are two of the biggest moments of this season, and he showed up.
You could argue that Arkansas and Baylor are two of the three most athletic teams they've played, UConn being the other. Maybe Marquette, too.
Yeah.
You know. But the fact that he seems to thrive in games where the caliber of athlete and player on the other side of the court is really high. Because Arkansas is in the Sweet 16. Yeah. They just beat Kansas.
And they had good guards over there.
Anthony Arkansas can go to the Final Four. They have Final Four talent. They do. They didn't have Final Four focus all season long. But they're maybe the team that's closest to Creighton in terms of just what you see, what the potential ceiling is really special. And Nemhard was the reason they beat Arkansas. And he was a big reason why they beat Baylor. The game got a little loose at the end. Baylor scored a bunch of points. But I thought Creighton's defensive plan against Baylor was terrific.
Yeah,
and Mac brought it up after the game of, like, they made some shots from 12 feet away, but we knew they couldn't make that many. And for people who like volleyball, here's the analogy that you would use in volleyball. What Creighton was forcing Baylor to do is similar to what a great block in volleyball does when you're not able to just hit cross court over and over, and you have to hit roll shots again and again and again. A roll shot is just a little, you know, a little dink over the block. Baylor had to do that all night, and they couldn't. They couldn't score enough points because Creighton took away the three, and they gave him that little 12-footer, and it wasn't enough.
Yeah, and to LJ Cryer's credit, that's some of the best shot-making I've ever seen in my life. And same thing with Taquavion Smith. Taquavion Smith was twisting and turning his body and hitting some absolute nut shit, if I'm being real. But
it's not enough. You have to hit threes.
Yeah, and really – I was stunned because with NC State, it was like, okay, you could let Taquavion Smith go off for the game of his life, look good in front of the scouts, probably what he would want anyway, and limit everybody else. But with Baylor, it wasn't exactly that simple because it's not LJ Cryer and Adam Flagler or LJ Cryer and Keontae George. It's all three of these dudes.
No, they took George away.
Yeah, they
well, he took himself. He didn't play well, but they took him away.
A lot of that had to do with them. I was surprised some of those stops Baylor Shireman got because obviously he hasn't been a premier defender.
Right.
At times, he also hasn't been terrible too often. And so there was a bit of unpredictability to it, and he took away. He was a big chunk of the reason why a future lottery pick had his worst game of the season. And I was stunned by how well they relatively limited Flagler and George.
Do you think he's going to come back, the George kid?
No,
he might.
Hell no. There's no way. This is like. The only people that think he's going to come back, these are the same people that have been telling me, oh, Cam Whitmore is going to come back, or Sharif Cooper was going to come back to Auburn 2 years ago. These dudes are being, well, Sharif Cooper kind of fell out of the range that he was supposed to. But if these dudes are top 10, top 14, I don't know why the hell they would come back. I mean, he doesn't owe Baylor anything. And frankly, I don't know what, it's not like they have a crazy juggernaut of a dynasty going forward that he would feel like he has unfinished business. Mm.
So next up is Princeton. And this is tricky, right? Because Princeton's the number 15 seed. They had this epic finish to beat Arizona, which was framed as Arizona's collapse, which is fair. I think that's a reasonable take.
Very fair.
Arizona's a good team. Yeah. Had a really good season, and they fell apart in the last 5 minutes. Worst 5 minutes, obviously, of their season. And then they play Missouri, and Missouri was playing pretty well, in my opinion. In the last 12 games of Missouri's season, regular season and SEC tournament, I think Missouri was better than the seed that they had.
I'd agree.
Princeton beat Missouri badly. They beat them by 15. But the way they did it.
It was convincing the whole way.
Yeah. So, you know, people's mindset of Princeton, I think their win over UCLA predates your birth, I'm pretty sure.
A lot of stuff predates my birth.
So they beat UCLA. They were a 4 seed, and they beat UCLA as a 13 seed in 96 or 97.
Yeah.
96.
A few years before I was alive.
And they beat UCLA 45-43. And it was one of these sort of master classes of take the shot clock down to the last 2 seconds, backdoor pass, you know, Hoosier stuff. I mean, that's what it was. This Princeton team, to me, I mean, they blew by Missouri. And one of my friends sent me a text of like, Missouri's players are fat. I don't think that's true. I think they're big and athletic. But Princeton made them look slow. Princeton was quick.
Yeah.
This is a challenging team
for sure.
Its own way. What is the challenge that Creighton has in this game?
Yeah, and first a note on Mizzou. I'm not necessarily happy they lost, but I just thank God we didn't have to open Pandora's box because the amount of questions I got asked about, oh, Creighton versus Mizzou, wouldn't that be a fantasy for you? Like no, I'm no. not a – I'm not a MIZ Mizzou fan. I went to school there. It was cool. I covered the team, so I detached myself emotionally from them,
right.
Which is what people should be doing in this position. I don't care what could have been. And for what it's worth, Mizzou's best player was Kobe Brown. Really great college player, like really, really good college player. But he took them as far as they could have gone. I thought that team overachieved. Dennis Gates in his first year, really, really good coach for the talent. You look at their talent. They did more than they should have. Does that mean Princeton should have beat them? Probably not. But am I surprised? Hell no. Princeton, to be as undersized as they are, really physical, can really get on the offensive glass in sneaky ways. Undersized, obviously, but their strengths lie on being – sneakily physical. They play good defense without fouling, probably not as well as Creighton. No, nowhere near as well as Creighton, but that's obviously a credit to Creighton more than anything.
Right.
But they still do a good job of playing bigger than they really are.
They're So the thing that Missouri did is they tried to, I don't know what, press is the wrong word, but they tried to extend their pressure outward and take away the three-pointer. And they were burned. I mean, Princeton got by them, and there wasn't anybody at the rim. Creighton will have a guy at the rim, right?
For sure.
Ryan Kalkbrenner is a player that Princeton has probably not dealt with very many times this season. Although, Arizona's got size. I think that's going to be a challenge for Princeton simultaneously. This is one of those games, though, where mentally, if you get behind early, and Missouri did, and they never were able to get back. They weren't able to climb the hill. And I've seen Ivy League teams do this before. In my opinion, Nebraska's second best basketball team ever fell behind early to a Penn team in 94 in the NCAA tournament, and they never got back. They lost 90-80, and it was a up-and-down game, and Nebraska played well in stretches, but they never got back in that game. How important is a fast start for Creighton? Like, to be able to say, we're Creighton, and you're not, and just be up 10 after the first 7 minutes.
Yeah, it means everything. But I will say, being down maybe five early might lead to a game that ends up closer. But I still think Creighton wins solely because, like, you made a good point. They probably haven't seen anything like Kalkbrenner, and that's becoming a theme for all the teams that Creighton runs into. Because you ask these coaches, have you seen anybody like Kalkbrenner in their season? You talk to Kevin Keats if he's seen anybody in the ACC like Kalkbrenner. It's like, hell no. Nobody defends the way he does. And even on offense, nobody is scoring without the ball the way he does.
Yeah, Kalkbrenner made North Carolina State centers not. He did not play well.
He made them look terrible.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because DJ Burns was like a focal point going into that game with the skill, the ball skills, the playmaking, the little 15-footer. And he could never check Kalkbrenner. The backup was even worse off.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and then you look at Baylor. Baylor, I think, dedicated their entire a chunk of their game plan to making sure he didn't do what he did against NC State. And even still, he got a few buckets here and there. But on the other end, it's like you've never seen a rim protector like this throughout your season.
Right.
Most of the Big 12 teams, I'd say, the better defensive teams, they pressure the ball. They don't have a guy who can drop like this or who is meeting you at the rim like this, or at least to this level. So to Princeton's point, the best teams Princeton has played, they're playing now. Arizona, Mizzou, and of course two very good teams there, but they didn't play anybody in season. So they damn sure didn't play a Ryan Kalkbrenner. So I think even if Princeton gets out to, I don't know, a 5-point lead that maybe feels bigger than it actually is, possession after possession, driving head on into Kalkbrenner, it'll all boil down to that, and those leads dissipate when you're running to that dude.
I apologize for not being able to pronounce the name of the Princeton's best player, but he's a good player, and he's
Tosun.
Tosun, that part I know. If Boyam. I'm not sure how to say it.
Yeah, I heard it in their press conference the other day, but
He's a good player. And so, like, they'll have to figure out how to stop him. And then they have three-point shooters that they array around the court, and they spray it. That guy specifically sprays it to them, and they'll either hit shots or they won't. And then the thing that I think the Missouri game exposed is Princeton's ability to blow by, and they did. They blew by Missouri's defenders quite a bit. When you look at Creighton's side of it, I think if Creighton plays a B game, they win. And if they get 9 points from Francisco Farabello, I'm not sure that they lose many games at all.
Very true.
That was it was very fortuitous for him to have his best game of the season against Baylor. If he doesn't make any of those threes, it's probably a one or two possession game at the end.
Yeah.
His three-pointers changed the nature of that game.
Yeah. And
huge.
And a few of them were demoralizing because it felt like on a couple of them he had more space than he probably should have. They went back and watched film, saw that he hasn't shot the ball to the standard he would have liked this year, and it was like, okay, we'll see one go through the net, see where it ends up. And I thought they did a great job of finding him. I mean, they often do. But in these looks, I mean, he was confident. He stepped into them with confidence. I think by the third one, he had already walked off before the ball even went into the net. Like,
then he had the
yeah.
Yeah. Creighton was getting pretty full of itself there at the end, which is okay. Okay, so if Creighton wins and they beat Princeton, we're not going to have another podcast before after Friday's game. You will have videos with Tom Chattel and all the rest. But here's the deal. If they beat Princeton, it's very likely that what awaits them in the Elite Eight is Alabama, one of the most untraditional number one overall seeds that I can remember. They don't have the blue blood pedigree. They haven't been there. Their coach hasn't been there. Like, he has not been there. This does happen sometimes, and, you know, there was a time when Jay Wright had to do this for the first time, and he got there. But, you know, Jay Wright didn't win the national championship until I think he had been to his third Final Four or fourth. So it takes some time. I don't personally consider Alabama the overall favorite to win the NCAA title.
I don't either.
I consider it to be Gonzaga, which is odd. But maybe the winner of the Gonzaga-Houston game.
Yeah, Houston is my pick.
Yeah.
That's been my pick all year.
The right side of the bracket looks harder than the left side at this point. But sure. Alabama awaits. And the primary story about Alabama basketball for the last month has not been the skill of its basketball team. Much like the 1995 Nebraska football team, the primary story about Alabama basketball has been off the court. And it has been specifically a kind of, you know, and this really followed Nebraska's football program throughout that entire year. And they actually were galvanized by it. Like they took something from that, from the many things that happened during that season, crimes that were committed, and they used it, you know, as internal whatever. Nate Oates has handled this very interestingly. He's kind of kept the team together. He probably could have suspended Brandon Miller. You know, if you listen to Nick Saban yesterday, it sounds like Nick Saban would have suspended Brandon Miller, but he didn't. So Creighton will probably have to play that team on the court. How good is that team?
A really good team. Both sides of the floor, they're deep. They spend a lot of time behind the 3-point line. I mean, it's been a signature for Nate Oates' teams at Bama while he's been there. You know, threes and layups. That's how they get off, and they get to them. They get to those shots. They got into them this year probably better than they have under him, and they've had some pretty good teams under him. I think this has been the best one, maybe by far. And they've had – I mean, I think back to John Petty, Javon Quinterly when he first got there. They got dudes on his team, man, and Brandon Miller's a top five player in college basketball, which makes it very, very hard to game plan for them because he's like a matchup nightmare with his size and handle and everything he can do and how he's progressively gotten better throughout the year. So, yeah, they're a top five defense in the country, one of the better offenses in the country. It's just an all-around problem when you face them. And Creighton will see that. Creighton might be a little overmatched, but maybe they follow the same guidelines that they've had all tournament in terms of, you know, running Bama off the line, letting Brandon Miller go for 25, 30, and somehow gutting out a win. I think there is a reality, if I'm stepping back into my Doctor Strange role, there are maybe, I don't know, 200 to 300 realities out of 1,000 where that game plan works against Bama.
If people want to know what Alabama plays like, they can very easily look at the ideology of Fred Hoiberg. The way that Fred wanted to play at Nebraska and it didn't work, and the way he did play at Iowa State, is the way Nate Oates plays. How do we know that? Because one of Nate Oates' assistants, Charlie Henry, is a Fred Hoiberg protege. And then Charlie Henry has now moved on to what school? I can't even remember. But he's got a different job now. Nate is a guy that Nebraska would have strongly considered if Fred Hoiberg had said no. That's kind of what they were looking for. And so it's interesting. Nate Oates comes from Buffalo. He's now at Alabama. The last time Alabama was in the Elite Eight is 2004. I know nothing about that team. I couldn't tell you anything about that particular team. The previous time they were in the Elite Eight, many, many years before that, was when they had, and this is how long it's been, Latrell Sprewell.
That's a pretty good name.
That is. It's probably the best player in their, you know, school's history.
I don't know. Brandon Miller might be coming for that.
Might title. Be. Yeah. You never know. Anyway, well, yeah, I mean, that's what's in front of Creighton. I mean, it's going to be a long shot if they play Alabama. Alabama's team is really good. They haven't been there. They haven't done this. It's going to be new to them. And so Creighton will not be playing a team. Just as an example, they won't be playing Gonzaga. They won't be playing Gonzaga. Gonzaga may not be as good of a team, but Gonzaga's been there. They know it.
So, but for what it's worth, like, I'll play devil's advocate here. The best teams in this tournament haven't been there, but it hasn't lessened their chances of getting there and winning the game. I mean, Houston has been Houston's gotten far a few times. Yeah, Houston's gotten far a few times. I think that's the best coach in basketball. But the championship game, haven't been there.
Right. That's fair.
You know, I look at Texas. Rodney Terry took over middle of the year.
Yep.
I can't remember the last Final Four Texas was in. Definitely
that's
haven't
when
been.
Chris Clack was there. It was in 04.
Sure. So
03.
UConn hasn't been there with Danny Hurley. I'm trying to think. Gonzaga's been to 8 straight Sweet 16s, which is a very
Xavier hasn't
very,
been
very impressive feat.
Although their head coach has. Sure, their head coach knows.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been there with them. Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, UCLA's got some experience. Some of these other teams. I'm just saying that one thing that Creighton can count on going into Sunday is regardless of who they play in that game, that team's not going to be going into that game having any fewer emotions about playing in that game than Creighton would. Alabama's going to have all the butterflies, even if they're a better team. San Diego State, which we haven't talked much about, Creighton knows all about San Diego State.
Very true.
They played them last year in the NCAA tournament, and they have played them many, many years in the Greg McDermott era because he likes playing them. So there's not going to be any mystery about San Diego State if they were to pull off a huge upset against Alabama, and I think we both agree that would be a huge upset. That would not...
It would be,
that seems very unlikely.
It would be... I know people were in my replies about this over the weekend, but it would probably be more stunning than Fairleigh Dickinson Purdue to me. Because,
I don't know about that, but because I get you.
This is the thing. I've been on record basically saying Purdue stinks for like 2 months. And so for it to come to fruition was like, I was happy about it.
Sure.
But I felt really good about my brain that day.
I would be more surprised if San Diego State beat Alabama than I was when Arkansas beat Kansas.
Because for sure.
The talent level of those two teams. And the other thing is with San Diego State is they have to win. If they're going to beat Alabama, they'd have to win. They'd have to win 59-57. And I just don't see that happening. Okay, we're going to get out. Joel's got to go over to Creighton availability. Okay, so let's just get a quick prediction. You think they're going to beat Princeton?
I do.
You think they're going to beat Alabama?
I don't.
Okay, there you go. We're going to have full coverage from Louisville this week. Joel will be there. Tom will be there. We'll have a photojournalist, Anna Reed, there. So we'll have videos. We'll have commentary. We'll have all kinds of stuff from Louisville. It's going to be great. Listen, watch, read. Thank you, Blue Jay fans.